Switzerland Conquests. Chapter 3. The Reform Accepted by the People. It now became a question of propagating throughout all the canton the reform accomplished in the city. On the February 17th, the council invited the rural parishes to assemble on the following Sunday to receive and deliberate upon a communication. The whole church, according to the ancient usage of Christendom, was about to decide for itself on its dearest interests. The assemblies were crowded. All conditions and ages were present. Beside the hoary and the trembling head of the aged man might be seen the sparkling eye of the youthful herdsman. The messengers of the council first read the edict of the Reformation. They next proclaimed that those who accepted it should remain, and that those who rejected it should withdraw. Almost all the assembled parishioners remained in their places. An immense majority of the people chose the Bible. In some few parishes this decision was accompanied with energetic demonstrations. At Arbig, Zofingen, Brugge, Aarau, and Buren, the images were burnt. At Stauffenberg, it was said, idols were seen carrying idols and throwing one another into the flames. The images and the mass had disappeared from this vast canton. A great cry resounded far and wide, writes Bullinger. In one day Rome had fallen throughout the country, without treachery, violence, or seduction, by the strength of truth alone. In some places, however, in the Hasli, at Furtigen, Unterseen, and Grindelwald, the malcontents were heard to say, if they abolish the Mass, they should also abolish tithes. The Roman form of worship was preserved in the Upper Simmental, a proof that there was no compulsion on the part of the state. The wishes of the canton being thus manifested, Bern completed the Reformation. All excesses in gambling, drinking, and dancing, and all unbecoming dress, were forbidden by proclamation. The houses of ill fame were destroyed, and their wretched inhabitants expelled from the city. A consistory was appointed to watch over the public morals. 7 days after the edict, the poor were received into the Dominican cloister, and a little later the convent of the island was changed into an hospital. The princely monastery of Königsfeld was also devoted to the same useful purpose. Charity followed everywhere in the steps of faith. We will show, said the council, that we do not use the property of the convents to our own advantage. And they kept their word. The poor were clothed with the priest's garments, the orphans decorated with the ornaments of the church. So strict were they in these distributions, that the state was forced to borrow money to pay the annuities of the monks and nuns, and for 8 days there was not a crown in the public treasury. Thus it was that the state, as it has been continually asserted, grew rich with the spoils of the church. At the same time they invited from Zurich the ministers Hofmeister, Megander, and Reliquin, to spread throughout the canton the knowledge of the classics and of the Holy Scriptures. At Easter the Lord's Supper was celebrated for the first time according to the evangelical rites. The two councils and all the people, with few exceptions, partook of it. Strangers were struck with the solemnity of this first communion. The citizens of Bern and their wives, dressed in decent garments, which recalled the ancient Swiss simplicity, approached Christ's table with gravity and fervor. The heads of the state showed the same holy devotion as the people, and piously received the bread from the hands of Berthold Haller. Each one felt that the Lord was among them. Thus Hofmeister, charmed at this solemn service, exclaimed, how can the adversaries of the word refuse to embrace the truth at last, seeing that God himself renders it so striking a testimony? Yet everything was not changed. The friends of the gospel witnessed with pain the sons of the chief families of the Republic parading the streets in costly garments, inhabiting sumptuous houses in the city, dwelling in magnificent mansions in the country, true seigneurial abodes, following the chase with hound and horn, sitting down to luxurious banquets, conversing in licentious language, or talking with enthusiasm of foreign wars and of the French party. Ah, said the pious people, could we but see old Switzerland revive with its ancient virtues? There was soon a powerful reaction. The annual renewal of the magistracy being about to take place, the counselor Buchelbach, a violent adversary of the gospel, was ejected for adultery. 4 other senators and 20 members of the great council were also replaced by friends of the Reformation and of the public morality. Emboldened by this victory, the evangelical Bernese proposed in the diet that every Swiss should renounce foreign service. At these words the warriors of Lucerne started under their weighty amour, and replied with a haughty smile, when you have returned to the ancient faith we will listen to your homilies. All the members of the government, assembled at Bern in sovereign council, resolved to set the example, and solemnly abjured the pay of foreign princes. Thus the Reformation showed its faith by its works. Another struggle took place. Above the Lake of Thun rises a chain of steep rocks, in the midst of which is situated a deep cavern, where, if we may believe tradition, the pious Breton, Beatus, came in ancient times to devote himself to all the austerities of an ascetic life, but especially to the conversion of the surrounding district that was still heathen. It was affirmed that the head of this saint, who had died in Gaul, was preserved in this cavern, and hence pilgrims resorted thither from every quarter. The pious citizens of Zug, Schwytz, Uri, and Argovia groaned, as they thought that the holy head of the Apostle of Switzerland would hereafter remain in a land of heretics. The abbot of the celebrated convent of Muri in Argovia and some of his friends set out, as in ancient times the Argonauts went in quest of the Golden Fleece. They arrived in the humble guise of poor pilgrims, and entered the cavern. One skillfully took away the head, another placed it mysteriously in his hood, and they disappeared. The head of a dead man. And this was all that Rome saved from the shipwreck. But even this conquest was more than doubtful. The Bernese, who had gained information of the procession, sent three deputies on the May 18th, who, according to their report, found this famous head, and caused it to be decently interred before their eyes in the cemetery belonging to the convent of Interlaken. This contest about a skull 1453 characterizes the church that had just given way and burned before the vivifying breath of the gospel. Let the dead bury their dead. The Reformation had triumphed in Bern, but a storm was gathering unperceived in the mountains, which threatened to overthrow it. The state in union with the church recalled its ancient renown. Seeing itself attacked by arms, it took up arms in its turn, and acted with that decision which had formerly saved Rome in similar dangers. A secret discontent was fermenting among the people of the valleys and mountains. Some were still attached to the ancient faith. Others had only quitted the mass because they thought they would be exempted from tithes. Ancient ties of neighborhood, a common origin, and similarity of manners had united the inhabitants of the Abwald, Unterwalden, to those of the Hasli and of the Bernese Oberland, which were separated only by Mount Brunig and the high pass of the Yoke. A rumor had been set afloat that the government of Bern had profaned the spot where the precious remains of Beatus, the apostle of these mountains, were preserved, and indignation immediately filled these pastoral people, who adhere firmer than others to the customs and superstitions of their forefathers. But while some were excited by attachment to Rome, others were aroused by a desire for liberty. The subjects of the monastery of Interlaken, oppressed by the monkish rule, began to cry out, "We desire to become our own masters, and no longer pay rent or tithes." The provost of the convent in a fright ceded all his rights to Bern for the sum of 100,000 florins, and a bailiff accompanied by several counselors went and took possession of the monastery. A report was soon spread that they were about to transfer all the property of the convent to Bern, and on the April 21st bands of men from Grindelwald, Lauterbrunnen, Ringelberg, Brienz, and other places crossed the lake or issued from their lofty valleys, and taking forcible possession of the cloister, swore they would go even to Bern in quest of the goods which the citizens had dared to take from them. They were quieted for a time, but in the beginning of June, the people, at the instigation of Unterwalden, again arose in all the Hasli. The Landsmind having been convoked, it decided by a majority of 40 voices for the re-establishment of the Mass. The pastor Jekli was immediately expelled. A few men crossed the Brunig, and brought back some priests from Unterwalden, to the sound of fifes and trumpets. They were seen from afar descending the mountain, and shouts, both loud and long, replied to them from the bottom of the valley. At last they arrived, all embraced one another, and the people celebrated the Mass anew with great demonstrations of joy. At the same time, the people of Frutigen and of the fertile valley of Adelboden assailed the Castellan Reuter, carried off his flocks, and established a Roman Catholic priest in the place of their pastor. At Eski even the women took up arms, drove out the pastor from the church, and brought back the images in triumph. The revolt spread from hamlet to hamlet, and from valley to valley, and again took possession of Interlaken. All the malcontents assembled there on the October 22nd, and swore, with hands upraised to heaven, boldly to defend their rights and liberty. The Republic was in great danger. All the kings of Europe, and almost all the cantons of Switzerland, were opposed to the gospel. The report of an army from Austria, destined to interpose in favor of the Pope, spread through the reformed cantons. Seditious meetings took place every day, and the people refused to pay their magistrates either quitrent, service, tithes, or even obedience, unless they shut their eyes to the designs of the Roman Catholics. The council became confused. Amazed and confounded, exposed to the mistrust of some and to the insults of others, they had the cowardice to separate under the pretext of gathering the vintage and folding their arms. In the presence of this great danger, they waited until a Messiah should descend from heaven, says a reformer, to save the Republic. The ministers pointed out the danger, forewarned and conjured them, but they all turned a deaf ear. "Christ languishes in Bern," said Haller, "and appears nigh perishing." The people were in commotion. They assembled, made speeches, murmured, and shed tears. Everywhere in all their tumultuous meetings might be heard this complaint of Manuel on papists and the papacy. With rage our foes their hateful threats denounce, because, O Lord, we love thee best of all, because at sight of thee the idols fall, and war and bloodshed, shuddering, we renounce. Bern was like a troubled sea, and Haller, who listened to the roaring of the waves, wrote in the deepest anguish, "Wisdom has forsaken the wise, counsel has departed from the counselors, and energy from the chiefs and from the people. The number of the seditious augments every day. Alas! What can the bear, oppressed with sleep, opposed to so many and to such sturdy hunters? If Christ withdraw himself, we shall all perish." These fears were on the point of being realized. The smaller cantons claimed to have the power of interfering in matters of faith without infringing the federal compact. While 600 men of Uri kept themselves ready to depart, 800 men of Unterwalden, bearing pine branches in their hats, symbols of the old faith, with haughty heads, with gloomy and threatening looks, crossed the Brunig under the ancient banner of the country, which was borne by Gaspard de Flew, a very unworthy grandson of the great Nicholas. This was the first violation of the national peace for many a year. Uniting at Hasli with the men of Brienne, this little army crossed the lake, passed under the cascades of Gisbach, and arrived at Unterseen, 1,300 strong, and ready to march on Bern to re-establish the Pope, the idols, and the mass in that rebellious city. In Switzerland, as in Germany, the Reformation at its outset met with a peasant war. At the first success, new combatants would arrive and pour through the passes of the Brunig upon the unfaithful Republic. The army was only 6 leagues from Bern, and already the sons of Unterwalden were proudly brandishing their swords on the banks of the Lake of Thun. Thus were the federal alliances trodden underfoot by those very persons who aspired to the name of conservatives. Bern had the right to repel this criminal attack by force. Suddenly calling to mind her ancient virtues, the city roused herself, and vowed to perish rather than tolerate the intervention of Unterwalden, the restoration of the mass, and the fiery violence of the peasants. There was at that moment in the hearts of the Bernese one of those inspirations that come from above, and which save nations as well as individuals. "Let the strength of the city of Bern," exclaimed the Avoyer Dierlach, "be in God alone, and in the loyalty of its people." All the council and the whole body of the citizens replied by noisy acclamations. The great banner was hastily brought forth, the townspeople ran to arms, the companies assembled, and the troops of the Republic marched out with the valiant Avoyer at their head. Scarcely had the Bernese government acted thus energetically, before it saw the confidence of its friends increase, and the courage of its adversaries diminish. God never abandons a people who are true to themselves. Many of the Oberlanders became intimidated, and deserted the ranks of the revolt. At the same time, deputies from Baal and Lucerne represented to Unterwalden that it was trampling the ancient alliances underfoot. The rebels, disheartened by the firmness of the Republic, abandoned Unterseen, and retired to the convent of Interlaken. And soon after, when they beheld the decision of their adversaries, distressed besides by the cold rains that fell incessantly, and fearing that the snow, by covering the mountains, would prevent their return to their homes, the men of Unterwalden evacuated Interlaken during the night. The Bernese, to the number of 5,000 men, entered it immediately, and summoned the inhabitants of the Hasli and of the bailiwick of Interlaken to assemble on the November 4th in the plain that surrounds the convent. The day being arrived, the Bernese army drew up in order of battle, and then formed a circle within which Durlach ordered the peasants to enter. Hardly had he placed the rebels on the left and the loyal citizens on the right, before the muskets and artillery fired a general discharge, whose report re-echoing among the mountains, filled the insurgents with terror. They thought it the signal of their death, but the Avoyer only intended to show that they were in the power of the Republic. Durlach, who addressed them immediately after this strange exordium, had not finished his speech, before they all fell on their knees, and confessing their crime, begged for pardon. The Republic was satisfied, the rebellion was over. The banners of the district were carried to Bern, and the eagle of Interlaken in union with the wild goat of Hasli hung for a time beneath the bear, as a trophy of this victory. Four of the chiefs were put to death, and an amnesty was granted to the remainder of the rebels. The Bernese, said Zwingle, as Alexander of Macedon in times of old, have cut the Gordian knot with courage and with glory. Thus thought the reformer of Zurich, but experience was one day to teach him that to cut such knots is required a different sword from that of Alexander and of Durlach. However that may be, peace was restored, and in the valleys of the Hasli no other noise was heard than the sublime tumult borne afar by the Reichenbach and the surrounding torrents, as they pour from the mountaintops their multitudinous and foaming waters. While we repudiate on behalf of the Church the swords of the Helvetic bands, it would be unwise not to acknowledge the political advantages of this victory. The nobles had imagined that the reformation of the Church would endanger the very existence of the state. They now had a proof to the contrary. They saw that when a nation receives the gospel, its strength is doubled. The generous confidence with which, in the hour of danger, they had placed some of the adversaries of the Reformation at the head of affairs and of the army, produced the happiest results. All were now convinced that the Reformation would not trample old recollections underfoot. Prejudices were removed. Hatred was appeased. The gospel gradually rallied all hearts around it, and then was verified the ancient and remarkable saying, so often repeated by the friends and enemies of that powerful republic. God is become a citizen of Bern.